Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll be hearing from Brian from Rena. So tell me a little bit about Rena.
So Rena was established in 1973 by a group of parents who were very concerned about making sure their children could stay in the community rather than be moved into institutional settings. So during the period, those with developmental disabilities often were sent into institutional settings, and families were quite concerned and wanted another option. So they got together as a group and created RENA as a Jewish response for the need for community residents in the Toronto area. So 1973, they started and founded it with generous support of the Berman family. Were able to buy two houses and started their first two group homes and a summer camp.
So how has it grown and expanded over time?
The RENA today now has supports close to 1,000 people in various services and programs, about 500 in residential services, meaning anything from a person living in their own apartment getting support 8 hours a week to someone with 24/7 care. RENA provides children's residential, so 15 years old, if a child and a family can't support their child any longer or having difficulty managing behaviors, there's a home and a place and a community environment where they could live and be supported 24/7, through to aging and palliative care. Now we have been developing and created the first aging homes for people with developmental disabilities and supporting people in palliative care. We now, besides the residential piece, RENA provides day programs. So these are adult day programs, activities, daily support, social engagement, and those can range from high community engagement to very limited for some people who have inability to access community supports or engage in community stuff. We also have employment services, supporting people in employment placement, coaching. And then we have outreach and day programs, so very integrated community-engaged, community-based services. So a whole range of things from housing, independent apartments, through to support and employment and so on. So a range of activities. We have 640 employees today, full-time equivalent, and serving a range of people in the greater Toronto area.
So how does the community typically respond to what you have available?
So there are two different, there are multiple communities out there. So there's the community of neighbors and friends who are really responding. responsive because we're so integrated into the community. We're so part of the infrastructure of the community. People know RENA and have a connection to the greater community. It's very receptive to partnering and working with us, everything from supermarkets, private stores, local community centers. That community has been very receptive. We've had some challenges in the area of people who own buildings or condos. So we have some people who we've helped buy condos in a condo building, and that community of people is a little more resistant. There's a bit of that NIMBYism, concern that the value of their property is going to go down because someone with a disability is living there, or their behaviors are not consistent with what they expect, or if there's problems such as bed bugs in the building. Those communities are a little more challenging because their approach to relationship building is very much built from them, their own needs outwards, and aren't necessarily supportive. Where we've had a little more success is in clustered housing, so that we pre-engage the neighborhood and the community before someone moves in. And then the community of parents have been very receptive in terms of the demand is high. We get a lot of calls, although we don't control access. It's done through the Developmental Service Organization of Ontario, but there is a direct need to contact us and want to contact us for support and strategies to help plan, particularly in key transition points. Those who are going from children to adult services, there's a great deal of contact and desire to hear from us. So that community of families is looking for that guidance. How do I manage when my kid's no longer at school, no longer getting children's services? And then also at the aging stage, so that could be anywhere from someone being 45 till 70, where the family is still supporting and they're living at home, and the family becomes quite concerned about what happens when they pass away and their loved one needs a community support, but they've been used to living at home. So that community, both those communities tend to reach out to us. And then there's the community of individuals who we support. That community of people, again, they're individuals each having their own needs. So some are very responsive. I was just with a woman today who has been living in one of our apartments that we built for 2 years. And I asked her, how are you enjoying it? She said, well, I wouldn't be here if I didn't love it. I choose where I want, and it's been great. And so I think it's been very a positive community response, both on all those levels, with many challenges.
So is there any one success case that stands out for you? A moment you weren't expecting, maybe, where you were able to really go above and beyond for a client?
There are many, but there's one recently. A woman called Shayna. She was born in Toronto. Family moved to the States. They were illegal status there. They didn't have legal status in Canada, and she was turning of age, and with the new government in the States, they were being pursued and about to be sent back to Sri Lanka, I believe the family was from. And we get a call from a lawyer from Montreal who's acting as the advocate to help her move back to Toronto as a Canadian citizen, as someone who was born in Toronto. She has every right to move back to her home. But without her family. And his intention in the phone call to me was just to find out what happens the day she lands and arrives in Toronto. Did I lose you?
Not at all.
Okay. When she arrives in Toronto and what would happen to her. And this is someone who had significant behavioral challenges, self-abusive, destroys property, couldn't couldn't go more than two blocks outside of the home, was afraid of vehicles, and so he was planning to sedate her. This is his strategy, and drop her off at Toronto Airport and want to know from me what would happen at that moment. And I said, whoa, let's slow down. Let's develop a strategy. And working with the federal government and immigration, working with health, working with MCSS, Ministry of Community Social Services, ourselves, our partners at the LIN, we had 12 organizations and three levels of government put together a strategy that surrounded this person with love. And we were able to send down two identical vehicles to pick her up, support her family, was able to bring her father with her to Canada thanks to federal support, got him a job, got her into a place with support, got her medical attention, and now she is functioning beautifully. She has her own space. She has a day program. She has not had a major incident in 6 months. The father is thrilled. The mother was able to come visit, and they are in a much better place. So it's amazing when whole systems come together around a person and the quality that can of life they can experience. And she was at risk, quite likely, of being institutionalized either in the States or in Sri Lanka, or worse, drugged and probably brought here and would have caused severe damage because she would have had a reaction to being suddenly showing up in a country in a place where she knew no one. So that's a case of involvement where, you know, you just take a moment of pride. But every day, you know, when I see someone who had never been to a public mall in their life because their behaviors were so significantly problematic, they would self-abuse or abuse others, going and walking through a mall and getting an ice cream, that's life-changing for that person. It took a year and a half of support, strategy, and work. But so there's every day I experience it. But those are some of the situations that bring a glow to my heart.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Are you a new or returning student at the university? Looking for a creative outlet that incorporates music and fun? Why not volunteer at CJAM FM? Volunteering isn't hard. All you need are a pair of headphones and the enthusiasm to learn. So grab some friends and email programcjam@gmail.com or come on down to the station. We're located in the basement of the CAW Student Center on the UWIN campus. And tune into CJAM anytime on the UWindsor app or online at www.cjam.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes athletic and recreational opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor and Essex County. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Brian Kesson from RENA. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Tammy Bernaski from Disability Rights Promotion International's AWARE project. So tell me a little bit about the latest with DRPI AWARE.
Okay, so Marcia and I and Sean Wilshire just returned from a trip to India, Bangladesh, and Nepal. It was a field work to follow up on the job placements that have taken place in each of those countries. And I, as a research assistant, was fortunate enough to be able to join them on this trip. So that was pretty interesting and exciting for me.
So what are some of the major accessibility challenges that they're facing in terms of employment over there?
Some of the major challenges. I think one of the most important challenges is the mindset of employers. Often employers think, not even just in those countries, but in many other places as well, but on this trip in particular, we heard from different people who said that employers will often think that people with disabilities can't be hired for whatever reason. They don't have skills or they can't contribute or that it will cost too much money to accommodate them, which is not always the case. In fact, it's rarely the case.
So how did you go about tearing down some of these myths and misperceptions?
I think one of the best ways I've seen this happen in this project is having employers who are committed to having a diverse workforce. So I'm just thinking of some really neat employers and very successful employers who I met who are very committed to not just hiring people with disabilities, but also having a diverse workforce. So I'm thinking about Mr. Gupta at Rockwell Industries in India or Thames Cleaning in Nepal. These organizations are committed to hiring people with disabilities, and they are good examples to other employers. And, you know, a lot of employers have gotten together. They're working on setting up employers' council initiatives in each of these countries. That's kind of a follow-up to this project, so that people who are currently hiring can work with other employers to become more committed to diverse workforces.
So, while you were on the trip, did you encounter any success of the project that has stood out for you?
Successes that stood out to me?
Yes.
I think a few things. It's hard to put it into words, but I think for me, whenever I spoke to the work placement coordinators, so the folks who are on the ground actually matching people with skills to jobs, I had the pleasure of interviewing a number of people involved in this project. And for me, what stood out was the look on people's faces when they talked about matching people to jobs. And also when I talked to people with disabilities who had been hired through the project, some of them talked about the feelings of confidence and dignity that they had because of their employment and being able to contribute to their families. So I think those things would stand out for me.
So what are the next steps in your research and your connection to this project?
So this project in particular is wrapping up in October, at the end of October. So I have a list of things that I'm going to do to follow up with the work placement coordinators and the country coordinators. But generally speaking, I think in the coming months before the project wraps up, I think the priority has been to match as many people to jobs as possible. But like I said before, one of the things is the employers' councils that will happen. So we're hoping that these employers' councils will take on this initiative to include more people with disabilities in their hiring practices, and then they'll be able to kind of snowball that into other organizations and employers. So I think that will be the big thing coming out of this project, will be to move forward with employers working together in those countries.
So in a sense, even with the project wrapping up, the work doesn't stop. There's always that growth and improvement.
Well, that's the hope, absolutely. I think with projects like this, not even just with this one, but other projects, the hope is that it's a starting point, not an ending point in terms of inclusion of people with disabilities. I think it's really important that there are solid next steps to take, even when the project ends.
So if you could send any message to the community about why it is people with disabilities need to be included in the workforce, no matter where or what circumstances they may be in, what would you say?
Why not? I always find it interesting that people have these perceptions. So my work, in terms of my own research, I'm doing my PhD in disability studies at York. And I'm very interested in motivation and perception. And I always find it very curious that people have these perceptions that people with disabilities somehow can't contribute to various aspects of life like other people, when in fact we do things just the same as other people, and sometimes we do them differently. But I think my message would be that people with disabilities are just as capable as anybody else in terms of contributing to employment in the workforce.
I think it comes from an outdated perception that those who have more physical abilities are in some way stronger workers. We as a people need to sort of veer away from that. That's the real gift of a project like this, I think.
Well, I hope that those outdated notions are challenged in more ways than one through this project and through other projects.
Fact is, we're always going forward as a people on a global scale when it comes to disabilities. With all the types and different classifications, you got to figure everyone's affected.
Oh yeah, I would say so. I think. What would I say to that? I think if you look at people with disabilities as a group, we're incredibly diverse, and sometimes we don't actually need to be called a group because there are so many people that are included. But in terms of advocating for rights and things like that, obviously there needs to be a group to advocate for. But generally speaking, in an ideal world, people with disabilities would just be among the population and would be treated equally.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Great, thank you.
Why not indeed, my friends? At what point does a person become judge, jury, and executioner of another person's value in the world? At what point can they say, I move this way, I think this way, I hear this way, I process information this way, that makes me superior? Not so. Never so. Fact is, people with disabilities always have something to contribute. No matter what the disability is, no matter how, quote, unquote, limiting it may be, a person with a disability, by their very presence, the fact that they are alive and a person of potential and value, can change everything. I've said it before that sometimes you might just see a person with a disability, a nonverbal one, for example, and they smile at you in just the right way. And you can go from having a rotten day to one in which you feel appreciated. And that is a contribution. We must never overlook the potential of any person with a disability or without to contribute. We must never say it's okay to disrespect them or to exclude them simply because we like to lord ourselves over. That's nobody's right, and we're only shortchanging ourselves. But the fact is, it does have to be taken to an international scale. The outdated notions and precepts that I was talking to Tammy about really come from this position of, our group is strong, your group isn't. And who are we to make that call? In fact, I maintain people with disabilities live with more strength, more courage, almost anybody you will ever hope to meet. Not because they want to be inspirational, necessarily, of course not. They just simply do what comes naturally. Some things require more strength, some things require a little assistance. But the fact is, it's still a contribution. It's still a gift to society. And we are not in a position underestimate that or devalue it. When it comes to disability employment, at least on a local scale, I know that they tend to actually care about their jobs. They tend to be grateful to have them. And as such, lower turnover rates and just better job satisfaction. And accommodations are not the big, scary monster some employers make them out to be. There's a legal provision that says if this accommodation will put you out of business, you don't have to do it. It's not reasonably justified. But if it's something so simple as adjusting work hours, creating job sharing, so a person with a disability can play their part within the company, why in the world wouldn't we just fill out the paperwork differently to have two people alternating shifts? It's not rocket science. And to the person with the disability getting a job, it's meaningful. It's a gesture to say management actually cares, and they appreciate what you do. You're a part of this team, you have a right to be part of this team, and no one is going to tell you otherwise, because we're going to go beyond just what the law says. We have to have X, Y, and Z in terms of safety and accommodations. But if it's a matter of doing it because it's what your heart tells you is right, and you've really come to appreciate people with disabilities are people first, and their condition simply one part of a much larger puzzle. It's not a complete picture if you just look at the disability or the impairment. A complete picture is, look at the person, where they come from, what they care about, what they enjoy, what skills they have, what education. You cannot judge any person or group in society by one simple factor. Even if history has told us it's okay to do so, those perceptions have to change. We have to grow beyond them. Fact is, the more we dwell on it, the more we make inclusion a chore, the more taxing it becomes. For example, a person with a disability asks a friend to socialize with them, hang out. They may hesitate, or they may just say, this is someone I enjoy spending time with. I'm not going to make it awkward. I'm just going to go and have a good time as I would with anyone else. Which is how it should be, my friends. Are we really so backward that we have to strain ourselves to spend time with our fellow human beings or to give them an opportunity that we would take for granted? Why? Why do we make it so much harder on ourselves than it has to be? I mean, people with disabilities aren't just valuable workers offering valuable insights to society. They are, in fact, a growing population, a maturing population. They bring new insights, new awareness, new perspectives. If history's shown us nothing else, it's shown us that a steady diet of the same old thing may work for years on end. Past a certain point, the world wants a little variety. They want the next advancement. And that can't come without a diverse workforce. If you have a steady vanilla diet of the same thing over and over again, it's the same homogenized ideas. You don't grow, you don't learn, you don't progress. And businesses that don't progress and respond to the needs of the people and the times, they fail. But in this case, they're failing not because they didn't deliver the newest iPhone. They're failing because they fail to recognize that the world is about growth and change, diversity, coming to understand the true meaning that life is not just one simple layer. They need to come to a place where they understand a workforce is more than just the same set of ideas over and over and over. The fact is, we can do better, but we need as many perspectives, as many capable individuals to be a part of the work as we can get. Progress is inevitable, but the question is, are we instruments of growth and change, or are we more comfortable in our outdated perceptions that our group is better than theirs? The choice falls to each of us. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.